welcome everyone to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me is it Pete? Are you Pete? Pete?
Are you serious? A reconditioning? You think that's going to work on me? I invented reconditioning. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 210, Hostile Takeover, is brought to you by my first book of Gaborim. Grab one out of a dumpster today.
Pete, we of course have more Runaways coming on next Sunday, next Wednesday, next Friday, as we conclude our discussions of these episodes. Of course, we'll do a season two wrap up the week after that, but busy times indeed, along with Godfriended Me, along with Star Trek Discovery being podcasted next weekend. The new episode, of course, dropping in these North Americas, because it's Canada too, on Thursday the 17th on Netflix, everywhere else in the world on Friday the 18th, and a podcast to follow that weekend. So the geeky times continuing.
Did a little math, Matt, and last podcast was our 300th episode all time of a Marvel Cinematic Universe TV show. No other podcast can even come close. Today is 301. We're going to be taking you all the way through 304 there to finish up Runaways, and then soon it'll be The Punisher, and soon it'll be Jessica Jones, and it'll be Cloak and Dagger, and it'll be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and on we go. But what do you say we get to the Runaways recap?
Take us to it, Pete.
Livy calls out for help, and AWOL was kind enough to bring her a beverage. No one knows she's there. She's got to tell him where they're hiding. He doesn't scare her, but Mitch, taking Tamar's baby via FaceTime, does. Old Lace thrashes around as Gert struggles. Alex and Carolina have bought every stomach medicine around. Nico has supplied her Wiccan charm bag to encourage good health. Alex uses WizMD to research Old Lace either has mercury poisoning or parrot fever, but Chase points out theropods have a lot of bird-like characteristics. They're interrupted by a motion sensor tripped by AWOL and the strike team. Nico camouflages the hostile. AWOL thinks Livy is lying until Mitch finds a not-so-well-placed camera. The Runaways are trapped, and the clock is ticking for Gert and Old Lace. Frank bids farewell to his congregants before he sees Vaughn and finds out Leslie is out back by the dumpster, throwing away some of the church's most sacred texts. Her father's dream journal? Really? But Frank has killed and sacrificed, and with Jonah gone, the church can now be what it was always meant to. But Leslie doesn't believe in the fake faith. Leslie tells him to choose between his family and the church, and Frank collects the books from the dumpster. AWOL gets a conversation going by threatening Livy. Alex wants to go out, but Molly pins him down. Janet is worried about the risk the high-power sound wave emitter will have on their kids, but Victor says it's safe. She understands they have to prevent Nico from being able to think of a spell, but it could cause brain damage. Victor asks her if she's always talked this much. Janet knocks a glass off the counter, and Victor alleviates her stress by doing something they haven't in a while. The debate continues on what to do at the hostel, but they're running out of time as Nico's never held a spell this long before. Chase negotiates with AWOL over the intercom and questions where Flores and their parents are. Carolina gets them to take the gun off Livy, but an impatient AWOL tases her. Alex says they need a hostage of their own. Chase delivers a pep talk to Gert, but she won't get up. Molly picks up old Lace and Chase gets Gert. Victor returns to the messy lab looking for Janet and asks what happened. She tells him what they did at 2 o'clock on a Wednesday and doesn't believe it. She chalks it up to the time he spent in the healing algorithm. He goes to lie down and Janet awaits Tina. Vaughn brings Leslie, Aura, and Francis. Frank has filled them in about Leslie's spiritual crisis. She informs them she's shutting down the church and they want to speak with Jonah. Vaughn overhears their conversation. Aura and Francis tell Leslie the church is its people, not its leadership. The Rolls-Royce tears out of the hostel, but Alex comes out with the footage. AWOL prepares to shoot him, but Alex jumps through the skylight. AWOL takes his go bag up the hill and rappels in when he finds Carolina levitating Alex, and Nico uses a spell to fortify the hostel and sever AWOL's rope. Chase speeds Gert and old Lace away, but he's not sure yet where he's going. Tina's into metal, as Janet explains. Victor is laying down after working nonstop, but Tina finds a bra, and she doesn't think it belongs to Victor. Janet doesn't understand why Tina's so comfortable with them using scary alien weapons on their kids, and not like metal at all, when she storms off. Not Tina and not Victor hug. AWOL's been tied up and Alex is brandishing the fistigons. He goes too far after AWOL taunts him. Carolina confronts Alex about almost hurting AWOL. AWOL taunts the struggling Nico, but Molly encourages her. Nico thinks there's something wrong with her after she killed Jonah because the staff told her to. She says she can feel it clawing at her, trying to rip through her skin. The strike team begins using a battering ram, and Molly summons Alex and Carolina. Carolina blasts AWOL, and Alex makes the strike team stop with the ram. Gert awakens in her parents' lab. Chase tells the Yorkses what Gert has eaten, but Stacy has the antidote. She sent a drone containing an agent poisonous to the dinosaur that should not have had an effect on Gert. Dale is upset that he was kept out of the loop, especially when he would not have approved the plan. And Stacy only has one dosage of the antidote, so old Lace is on her own. But Chase reminds them of the bond between Gert and Old Lace, reasoning that Old Lace get the antidote, which Dale administers. Stacy confirms Chase knows nothing about biology and her daughter. Alex, Carolina, and Gert build a barricade and prepare to let the strike team enter. Alex learned this strategy from playing Fortnite until 4 a.m., oh, which is a waste of time when your witch collapses after she drops the spell. The strike team frees AWOL and Alex fires the fistigons as they attempt to escape. Outside, Molly rocks Mitch's world as she rescues Libby. Cornered, Alex and Carolina prepare to fight AWOL and the strike team when Nico revives and summons her staff. Her eyes take on the appearance of Master Caecilius and his zealots who oppose the Ancient One at Karmar Taj in Doctor Strange, and the staff emits a strange dark energy as she tells them to get out. AWOL and the strike team vanish, leaving their clothing and weapons behind. Molly and Livy arrive, confirming Mitch disappeared outside as well. Gert thanks Chase for saving her and old Lace. Chase argues Gert's father was concerned, but discovers they're locked in as Gert tells him people don't change. Alex tells Livy Carolina and Molly got Nico to bed. Neither has an explanation for what happened to AWOL and the strike team. Livy can't stay, though, because she needs to go home and protect her nephew. Vaughn leads Leslie to a room with figures robed in white who plan to recondition her despite the fact she invented it. Frank, Aura, and Francis want her to sit down in the chair or they're going to have to take things to the next level. The hand scanner on the door won't let Leslie exit as she calls for a conflicted Vaughn as he leaves. Victor staples flyers with alien writing from the abstract to telephone poles, read in Jonah's voice, that those who survive the destruction of their ship should seek out Victor Stein and Tina Minoru. He eagerly awaits their reunion.
Pete, excellent summary there. Let's go down the list of baddies. The main baddie in this episode, of course, continues to be AWOL.
AWOL, RIP, AWOL, whatever at this point. I'm glad the character is gone. Nobody likes him. I don't think AWOL likes AWOL. And we'll talk in a little bit where he and Mitch and the strike team might be, but I think we can all agree everybody's better for it.
A deep dive there, Pete. Does AWOL like himself? We're getting kind of very, you know, is it Freudian? I don't know, but it's definitely very kind of psychological. What's the initiating thing in his life that turned him so bad, etc., etc.? Moving on, Pete, is Victor or Victor question mark? Do we get two Victors in this episode? Do we get Victor slash alien Victor? Is it Victor Victoria? I don't know anymore, Pete.
Wow, going way back to the 80s on that reference with the Julie Andrews movie there. I'm calling Victor and Tina and Stacy in their controlled forms, not Victor, not Tina, and not Stacy, because they're definitely not.
Pete, was it not Victor or Victor who made sweet love?
That was definitely not Victor. We'll talk. Is it even not Victor? Who's controlling Victor when we talk theories.
So you mentioned Tina, you mentioned Stacy, similar bag O questions here as with Victor. I feel like certainly with Stacy, I feel like we're getting a majority of the controlling force and not her root personality. What are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on who's in charge of Tina?
I think with Victor, his non-personality is very sweet, overly so, but remember how he was in the algorithm, so it wasn't that big a difference until, oh, what happened in here? And at least he's not the Victor of old under the influence of the tumor and violent with his wife, but he's still under the power of some alien being. With Tina, obviously the amped up sexual presence. It's not that we haven't seen Tina be sexual before. You know, we've seen this with Robert when she was fully in control of her faculties. This is just, you know, awkward alien over the top, sex, sex, sex all the time alien. With Stacy, I think the thing that's the most interesting is the cold calculating, the biggest difference in demeanor amongst any of those characters.
Would you put Nico on this list? I mean, she's no AWOL, Pete, but is there a villainous bent with the character?
I mean, given that Caecilius and his zealots were bad people that read the Book of Cagliostro in Doctor Strange that gave them strange knowledge and turned their eyes dark purple, outlined with silver and all cracked there, exactly like happened to Nico. Nico said that she felt the staff was willing her to kill Jonah. So it puts some hope back into the relationship with Carolina that, hey, I was under the influence of this thing, as opposed to I killed your father of my own free will.
Keeping hope in Fantastic Geek are those who go to patreon.com/fantasticgeek to help keep us afloat, send a couple of bucks our way with our bandwidth and storage costs, help out with that, and we hope, if you haven't visited there, that you can take a look.
Everybody who contributes, no matter what you do, gets access to exclusive podcast content. So whether it's a dollar a month, whether it's the AWOL, I got money to burn package, whatever you can give, we will be more than grateful to apply towards the podcast. So thank you.
Pete, let's talk some theories here with this notion of alien replacements of sorts, you know, the whole alien consciousness thing. Are we kind of revisiting a Body Snatchers vibe? Is this a sort of metaphorical exploration of the other invading the land, invading the homeland, if you will? Are we going that far to say, you know, hey, they're the people coming here who we don't want coming here?
No, I think these are dopey aliens inside dopey parents.
Which I feel like you're probably correct. And I certainly don't want to say, you know, oh, I'm down on Runaways and whatnot, but
no, that's not to, I mean, listen, could they have handled this better to this point? They could have. Was it handled better in this episode? Yes, in that Victor had an interaction with Janet before we were like, oh, he's an alien. Like, we bought into the amorous affections there without questioning them until he came back and revealed he didn't know what happened and that he wouldn't have done this, that this is out of character for him. You know, I think they were a little slow in the reveal of Victor, but again, that they handled it better than the previous episode of, oh, cake, and oh, why do I have cake on my finger? Or, oh, evil plan. Oh, where are my glasses? Like, you know, I made the comparison to the last episode that it was like, you know, lousy sci-fi writing, and I stand by that. Better done in this episode. I think there's a more convincing way, though, to present these aliens, and I hope the return of Jonah in voiceover portends a little bit more, because, again, there's been a vacuum since he's been off the show. Thank God this AWOL thing is over. We might look back at this AWOL subplot as being three episodes of padding.
Here is my point, then, regarding this question. If we get through this entire second half of this season with, you know, aliens sneaking their way into the land, I feel like in an episode that has been written in the last year, if it does just continue to be dopey aliens are the second worst, parents are the worst, then I feel like they've missed an opportunity to explore this larger issue, not just going on in our country, but, you know, part of the international dialogue now. I feel like it'll be a missed opportunity. And, you know, if that ultimately is the case, then that'll be on the weight of the show, which, to pivot to my next theory here, maybe the show is just being very kind of LA central, very kind of focused on the entertainment world. We see with Leslie's reconditioning here what really is meant to be a thinly veiled take on Scientology, isn't it?
Well, that's always seemed to be the case, right? When we talk about, you know, the Church of Gaborim, it's essentially been Scientology from the start. I can't imagine that's not what Brian K. Vaughan had initially used as his influence. And obviously the tales are out there as far as, you know, just the craziness of the things, the sci-fi religiosity, if you will. But if I could pivot back to, I just want to say one other thing about the point you made previously about, you know, how are they presenting aliens? We know that these writers, if they meant to have a discussion about what it means to be a foreigner in a different culture would do it more thoughtfully instead of, well, these are evil aliens led by somebody we know to be evil. There's no redemption in Jonah, apart from his very personal quest to get his daughter and bring his daughter with him. We see no really evidence that, yeah, he was going to leave behind the abstract. How do we know it's not booby-trapped or something like that? How do we know that's not the thing that the alien entities are attracted to, that they could identify one another? I mean, that Tina and Victor had to look at each other and identify themselves as not Tina and Victor. They don't even know one another. So, yeah, I just think if they were going to have a discussion through the material about, you know, what it means to be an alien in a culture, I think they do it a little bit more deliberately and a little bit more sensitively.
Another theory here, Pete, one that I think we've already dipped into a bit. Nico's crackly eyes, dark magic at work, corruptive magic at work.
I mean, listen, if she tells Dormammu she's come to bargain, I mean, we'll really know what's what. But yeah, I think it's right out of Doctor Strange. I think they've gotten the clearance to use that. We say it's all connected all the time. Jeff Loeb likes to remind us how we remind him. And yeah, I think this was a great place to do it. We've talked before about how Tina Minoru appears as a character in Doctor Strange. She's never name checked. It's a different actress. It's a thing, though. She's visible. She's got a staff. And now that we have this, so, you know, was that the dark dimension that AWOL and the strike team were sent to? I think is the biggest question, because there was clearly a different effect, not only on her eyes, but with her staff. And is this staff corrupting her? Are we paving the way to a Runaways story where she does not use the staff? We've already had her mother attempt to use it, can't now. Is this because, you know, that was right before she killed Jonah? Has there been some kind of corruption to go on?
I know that we have said off mic, and honestly, Pete, because we've been recording some of these Runaways episodes a little ahead of time, I don't remember it's been on mic as well, but I think a little bit more cohesion between the TV side and film side would be welcomed, particularly in this new era of whatever, whether it's increased peace inside Disney or with Fox joining the corporate family in 2019, et cetera. If we just get that little, like, you know, hey, it's meant to be the effect, or it's meant to be the same kind of dark magic, evil magic as in Doctor Strange, I think we certainly would be well served there. What theories do you have?
Is Stacy Jonah?
I don't know. I keep struggling with this idea that we're not going to... I assume we're not going to do without the actor for very long, but now this is, you know, this is a couple episodes. It's not unreasonable to not see Julian McMahon for a couple episodes, but I kind of have this expectation that we're going to see Julian McMahon back. I know I certainly had said in prior episodes, because he's a member of the credited cast. It did occur to me, though, I mean, spoiler alert, we saw that in Star Trek Discovery. In fact, Pete, I won't say exactly who, but we saw that with somebody who was a member of the credited cast, but did not appear in four or so episodes of the show in the first season.
But he did, because he was credited as another actor, which was...
talking about another other person.
Okay.
So, I mean, just the point being, I think on the one hand, there's an economic argument to say, hey, this is the network. We see Julian McMahon, who we're paying, you know, I'll just make up a number, $100,000 an episode. What do you mean it's the third episode in a row that he's not in? Let's go. Now, the flip side could be, hey, Julian McMahon wanted X amount of money to do this season. Yeah, the paychecks might be by episode, but our plan all along was, hey, Julian, we're going to need you for these 5 episodes, and you're going to have a little downtime, then you're not coming back, or you're this or you're that, you know, whatever it is. You know, that my sole economic argument might not hold water. So shame on all of you for listening to me when I brought it up.
Well, the reason I ask if Stacy is Jonah, the scientific, you know, acumen aside, when she confronts Chase that you know nothing about my daughter, remember that Chase and Carolina used to be a thing. We do not know if Carolina has confided in Jonah. Oh, yes. Here is this is Nico. This is my girlfriend. So that to me really made me think, well, maybe he is inhabiting her.
I like that as a theory. I like the use of evidence there. I'll build off of it and say, maybe it's the other parent. You know, I continue to be unclear, and I don't think it's my fault. I think the narrative has been unclear, perhaps intentionally so, as to the number of other aliens that were in the ship. I know that we've referenced the 2 or 3 purple-pink lights that came out before Jonah's death. Does that mean it's 3 other aliens, or is that just, I don't know, spaceship light, you know? I think the show is intentionally being a bit vague, so maybe it's another parenting force there as well.
How many other alien survivors are we talking about?
To be putting up posters on the telephone pole is suggestive of, I want lots of people to see this. And when I say people, Pete, I mean the alien people who can read that language. So to me, it's more than like, hey, there's the 4 of us that are fantastic, and I need to send up one signal to get the message out that everyone has to come back to the Baxter building. It's suggestive that there's lots of aliens that are out there. I mean, hundreds, thousands, or maybe, you know, dozens that have been there hundreds or thousands of years. It's suggestive of a much larger picture than we've been looking at. With that, Pete, let's go across the Atlantic partway through the continent of Europe to hear from our favorite Fred.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback, Runaways, Season 2, Episode 10. Today is the 31st of December, and this will be my very, very last audio recording for any podcast. So I wish you all, when you listen to this, because that will be in the new year, all the best for 2019. So last podcast, I anticipated that the drone had something to do with the sickness of Old Lace and Stacy also. And I was right. That doesn't happen often, but it's nice once in a while. What I didn't see coming was, although there were indications that Victor and Tina were acting strange, especially the scenes with the chocolate cake, that there was something, well, there was something weird, I noticed that, but that it would be that there are aliens in the different people. And I really wonder if there could also be an alien than in Stacy, because she's also acting quite differently than Dale is used from her. I really like the acting by Brittany Ishibashi, who plays Tina. It must be fun for her to play a quite different role here, instead of the very strict and bossy Tina, to this life-enjoying kind of person. And I really like the scene where she hits on Janet. And Janet is really, really confused. Okay, that is all for now. I keep it short this time. I don't feel too well. My son had the flu for the last 2 days, throwing up, having a little fever, and perhaps I have the same. So I'm going to stop here, and till next year. Bye-bye.
Well, first off, Fred, feel better and best wishes to you for 2019 as well. Matt, is it 2019 or is it 2019?
Here's the rule I have, Pete. 2019 takes longer to say than 2019, but both are shorter than 2019. So if you have spent this whole last decade with the and in there, then you've wasted a lot of time.
Well, and also denotes a decimal, which is what I learned from 16 years of being beaten in Catholic schools.
Were you, Pete, reprogrammed?
Reconditioned. at least to say and as a decimal and not to say, you know, here's $100, $103 like a moron.
Well, Pete, indeed, we hope that Fred feels better. His son feels better. We've always appreciated his comments through these first 10 episodes. Can't wait to hear his thoughts on the coming ones. Pete, how can people be like Fred? How can they be in touch with you on the Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKelaar, KetelAar, 10,281 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, on Instagram, on Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with the PH, all one word, like it today.
Well, Pete, we will be back on Sunday as we get ready for these final three episodes to talk the next episode of Runaways. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final word.
I am but an empty vessel for the light.